From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
Democrats hold their first presidential debate with Elizabeth Warren as the new frontrunner, and the first since Donald Trump with Joe Biden and his son Hunter's actions in Ukraine in the spotlight. How well did they hold up for 3 long hours? If it was tough for the viewers, I wonder how tough it was on the candidates. How well do they hold up, and did anyone else in the field stand out? Welcome. I'm Paul Gigot with the Wall Street Journal, and I'm here with Dan Henninger. Hello, Dan.
Hi there.
And good Kyle. Yeah, good to see you. And Kyle Peterson, how are you?
Hello, hello.
All right. So a couple of provocations I can throw at you, and you can give me your response vociferously. Wrestle me to the ground or what have you. Number one, I thought that Joe Biden gave a much poorer answer than I thought he would on his son Hunter. He was given the opportunity to explain it in 90 seconds or so, explain what he, or 75 seconds, give an explanation for what happened, and he basically dismissed it. Said, Hunter's judgment was good. I have no problems with it. I was fulfilling the policy of the administration. And there was no follow-up, really. The questioner gave Bernie Sanders a chance to follow up. Bernie didn't take the opportunity. So nobody, either on stage or among the three media questioners, really went at Biden on this point, Dan. So I think he still needs, though, to do a better job on this if he's in the days and weeks ahead.
Well, yeah, he does. I don't think there was any possibility that the others on the stage were going to take him to task for Hunter Biden, because they would have immediately been accused by Democrats, and these people are competing in the Democratic primaries. They would have been accused of carrying Donald Trump's water for him on Hunter Biden. That's the Trump attack line. So I don't think any of them were going to participate in that. This is not to say that Joe Biden's problems with his son aren't real. They are, and he's going to have to do a better job of defending himself. You know, that said, I thought Biden had a terrible night. Overall, yeah. It is really difficult for me to see the Joe Biden who was on stage in Westerville, Ohio, Tuesday evening, taking the stage a year from now in October in a presidential debate with Donald Trump. I think Trump would flatten this guy.
Would it? What was it, Dan? Was it the halting, kind of sometimes stumbling, mistaking Iraq for Syria, for example, those kinds of mistakes? There were a few of those.
There were more of them. There were too many of them. At one point, he was talking about in Syria. He said he would take up these attacks with Assad, and within 2 seconds, he had migrated over to Erdogan. He really meant to be talking about Erdogan.
Yeah.
And another point, he was talking about taxes, and he said on the capital gains tax, quote, "I would eliminate the capital gains tax. I would raise it to 39.5%." It was really nuts. He did a fair amount of that stuff, and you know. When he debated Paul Ryan in 2012, Paul Ryan was Mitt Romney's vice presidential running mate, by and large, people thought Biden had won that debate. The guy who defeated Paul Ryan in 2012 was not the person on stage in Westerville, Ohio. And when you step up to the major leagues with Donald Trump, and believe me, like it or not, it's going to be the major leagues, I don't think Biden has it.
Interesting. I thought he did better as the night went on. I thought he gave a great answer at the end and was strong. I agree that he was bumbling on that the foreign policy stuff, and the Hunter Biden stuff was inadequate in my view. But I thought he actually held up okay, Kyle. You can mediate this little debate.
I'm sort of in the middle ground. I thought some of his specific answers were good. He was asked, President Carter said recently that at age 80, he didn't think he would be able to do the job. What makes you so sure? He said, I've been there. I've done it. I know what we need to get done. I think he made a bigger mistake, though, which was that I don't think he treated Elizabeth Warren like the front runner that she clearly has become, or at the very least, a co-front runner. I mean, the problem that Biden has, if you dig into it, is it's beginning to be hard to figure out what vote he can consolidate. So in the polling, you know, you have Biden, you have Bernie Sanders, and you have Elizabeth Warren, the top three. And then below that, you have Pete Buttigieg at about 5% and Kamala Harris at about 5%. You know, neither of those constituencies are natural for him. Pete Buttigieg does disproportionately well among young voters, and Biden does disproportionately well among old voters. Kamala Harris does disproportionately well among women, and Biden does better among men. So it's – and if you look at the – there's a Morning Consult poll that asks people their second choice. People who like those candidates, both of them, their second choice is Warren. So what he needs to do is push back against Warren hard, and he did not do that. There was a specific question where Anderson Cooper said, you know, just to clarify, Vice President, who are you saying is being vague? And he said, well, you know, they're both being vague. There's $30 trillion. I mean, he needs to be like a laser focused on Elizabeth Warren.
Well, gentlemen, you come here not to praise Biden, but to bury him. Yeah. Let's move on to Elizabeth Warren, who I think was clearly the other members of the panel, the debaters, thought she was a front runner because they went after her in a big way. The press corps' conventional wisdom is that Elizabeth Warren looked strong. She won the debate. The focus was on her. She knocked back all of those criticisms. I disagree with that. I did think she looked strong. She was assertive. She had her talking points, but she had her talking points to a fault. And I think in particular, she had her talking points to a fault on the middle class tax question. I counted six times in one block of that debate where she was given the straightforward opportunity to say, in a couple of cases, a yes or no answer, would Medicare for All require you to raise taxes on the middle class? She ducked it every single time, and she gave the same answer every single time. She sounded a little bit like Marco Rubio to me in New Hampshire in that debate where Chris Christie took the bark off him for sounding so robotic. Every time it was. So I have made clear what my principles are here, and that is costs will go up for the wealthy and for big corporations, and for hardworking middle-class families, costs will go down. She said that every single time. And it's basically false. I mean, she aligns costs with taxes. She's trying to duck the point about taxes, and she doesn't address it full on at all. And I think that Buttigieg exposed that, and Amy Klobuchar exposed that. Joe Biden didn't quite have the skill set to really expose it, but here was Buttigieg's point that. If I can find it here in the transcript. Well, we heard it tonight, a yes or no question that didn't get a yes or no answer. What do you think?
Well, you know, I think Elizabeth Warren is running a kind of a base strategy. And she has come out for taxes on the wealthy, wealth tax. She attacks corporations relentlessly. This presumably is supposed to appeal to the Democratic left-wing base currently. Now, this is in contrast, interestingly, to Bernie Sanders. As I pointed out last night, Bernie, the other socialist, at least self-proclaimed socialist, and that's kind of the point when he said earlier this week, I'm a socialist, Elizabeth, I guess, calls herself a capitalist. Yeah, Bernie is a socialist because he is the one who, in a deed to proposing extraordinarily high wealth taxes, has said that taxes are going to have to go up on the middle class.
He said it last night.
He said it again last night to pay for these health care plans. He follows it up by saying, but their health care costs are going to come down, so it'll be a net benefit for them. But at least he is saying it. She simply will not say that because she does not, I think, feel at this point that it's going to be healthy to be running as a candidate who is raising taxes across the board on everybody.
That absolutely. I agree with that as her motivation, Dan. But how long can she duck this point?
I don't know. This has become a big issue now and has become an issue with Democrats. I doubt that it's sustainable. certainly not sustainable till October of next year, running against Donald Trump.
You had the national editor of the New York Times put the question to her twice. You had Buttigieg put it to her. You had Klobuchar put it to her. You had Bernie say essentially, I do think we have to admit that the middle class taxes are going up with this Medicare for All plan. And he makes the case that administrative costs and other copays and so on will go down. But the point is that you could confiscate the wealth of every billionaire in America. You could raise taxes on income. You could raise taxes on corporations. You could raise taxes on high earners, capital gains. You still wouldn't have enough money to pay for Medicare for All, which is $30 trillion over 10 years, conservatively scored, Kyle.
Yeah, it's a huge vulnerability, but one thing to note is that nobody with stature on the stage was really going after her on that point. I mean, Bernie Sanders said that he thought it was appropriate to acknowledge that under his plan, taxes would go up.
How do you define stature? It's simply who's the three in the polls? I mean, Klobuchar's not a chopped liver. She's a significant person.
Yeah, fair enough. But Bernie's not going to do it. Clearly, this non-aggression pact that he has with Warren has been holding. Biden didn't do it either because he wasn't prepared to do it. I don't know. I mean, I think it's a huge vulnerability for her. Another question you could ask her is she says, you know, costs will go down for anybody who's in the middle class. Well, how is she defining middle class? Is that anybody under $75,000 a year, $150,000 a year? I mean, that's a really difficult question that is going to make people who are sitting on their couches watching this debate, thinking about who they're going to vote for, maybe think twice if they're on the wrong side of that number that she gives. I mean, it's huge strategic ambiguity. I mean, clearly she's doing it in a calculated manner, but I agree that she needs to be pushed on that.
We're talking about the Democratic debate on Tuesday night, and you're listening to Potomac Watch from the Wall Street Journal.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.
From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
Welcome back. I'm Paul Gigot with Dan Henninger and Kyle Peterson talking about the Democratic debate. Dan, your impression of how Warren held up and how she presents herself?
Well, I think she held up. She presents herself very well. She's very forceful in defending her positions. But as we've just been discussing, you wonder a little bit if Elizabeth Warren, who's running this strategy by appealing to the left, you know, we live in an age when whatever these candidates are doing is covered relentlessly in a way that was never true before. And I'm beginning to wonder whether Elizabeth Warren isn't backing herself into some corners that's going to be hard for her to extract herself from. On the middle-class income tax, can she now climb down from this position? What would happen to her candidacy if she finally said, well, I admit it, we may have to raise taxes on the middle? That would be devastating.
Do you think so?
Point.
What if she put it in the context of the way Bernie did? I mean, this, I assume what she would do, she'd say, look, you know, I mean, there may be some taxes that have to go up on the middle class, but it's my last resort. And by the way, you're going to pay no copays, no deductibles, no, there's no any costs here. Just sell it that way. That's what Bernie does. I agree she'd pay a price for it now, but it's interesting. Would it be a price of the kind that she paid, which seems to have gone away from, for example, claiming over so many years that she had Native American heritage and then having to back down when it turns out she didn't?
Well, you know, she is beginning to sound – people have always said she sounded a little shrill. She's beginning to sound almost like a caricature of herself. At one point, I think I was hearing this right, she said, and I've addressed these things. I have 50 plans. And I said, 50 plans? I thought it was more like 22 plans. Suddenly it's 50. She has a plan for everything.
Yep.
Well, I mean, one thing to think about is as soon as she – if she were to lay out some basic – outlines of this plan, who she's going to raise taxes on, how much. Then you're going to have wonks and analysts, policy people who are going to run those numbers and see if they add up and put hard questions to her about whether they do or they don't. And I think that's one of the things that she's trying to avoid with this this nebulous language about costs. Costs are going to go up for rich people and they're going to go down. Is she doesn't want to have to really dig into the specifics.
No, undoubtedly true. Undoubtedly true. But it does also create an opening for her opponents to say, you know what? And some Democrats and eventually Donald Trump, if she gets the nomination, to turn this into a character issue. Are you actually being honest here about what it is you're doing? I think you could see that is a potential vulnerability. Well, let's talk about some of the other candidates. I thought Amy Klobuchar did very well. She finally showed up at a debate in a major way. She prosecuted a case against Warren. I thought she had made a pitch that I happen to think is a very good electoral pitch for the general election against Donald Trump. And by that, I mean she made a plausible case that she's going to be a unifier. She can work across the aisle. And she can, from the Midwest, run a good campaign on these themes against Donald Trump. In contrast to the strategy of Elizabeth Warren, which is to run, and Bernie Sanders, which is to run a left-wing populism strategy, motivating the left to counter Donald Trump's right-wing populism.
I agree. I thought it was her best night, her best debate probably so far. One thing that she's very good at is being specific, the complete opposite of the nebulous language. She talks about, you know, this is the bill that I sponsored. This is the way we would do it. The question is just whether that is enough to get her support in this Democratic Party. I mean, in the Real Clear Politics average, she's at 1.8%. You need to get into the next debate, the November debate. You have to have four polls that show you at 3%. She has only one of those so far. So in the next couple weeks, is that enough to bump her? I don't know. I mean, I would be surprised if it is, but, you know, stranger things have happened.
And Pete Buttigieg also made, I thought, telling points against Warren. And also against Beto O'Rourke on guns. He seemed to have moved to be making the argument, Dan, that I kind of am a moderate center-left politician more overtly than he has in the past.
Yeah, and you know, if I can push this a little bit further, Paul, I think that Mayor Buttigieg also made a telling point against Donald Trump, which you don't see very much from these candidates. The issue is Syria and the withdrawal of the troops up there in support of the Syrian Kurds. I thought this had created a significant political vulnerability for Donald Trump. And I have to say, I thought Pete Buttigieg was really pretty eloquent on this issue last night. He said a couple of things. Quote, "What we were doing in Syria was keeping our word. Part of what makes it possible for the United States to get people to put their lives on the line to back us up is the idea that we will back them up too." When Tulsi Gabbard took issue with that, when she was supporting Trump, he said, "Respectfully, Congressman, I think that is dead wrong. When I was deployed, I knew that one of the things keeping me safe was the fact the flag on my shoulder represented a country known to keep its word. Our allies knew it and our enemies knew it." I thought that was pretty good stuff.
Yeah, it's excellent. I agree with you, Dan. He's interesting because, as to Kyle's point about the polling, at 5% or so, he's likely to continue to be able to appear in these other coming up in the November poll and maybe in some of the others. If that happens, he can still stay in the game. And as other people drop out, maybe he has a chance to pick up some of that support. And if Biden collapses, maybe he's in a position to be able to inherit some of that. And if Klobuchar can stay in, I think she also might be in a position to pick up some of that vote. A couple of the other folks, Kamala Harris, I thought was dreadful. She staged an attack about on Elizabeth Warren because of goading her to close down support closing down Donald Trump's Twitter account. I don't know how many people care about that. and it was puzzling. And I thought she just she comes across as I think inauthentic. I didn't think she did well at all.
I agree. I thought that Twitter thing was very strange. She was essentially saying, will you, Elizabeth Warren, stand with me in demanding that Twitter close the Twitter account of the President of the United States? I thought that was a really odd hill to try to die on. I mean, she spent like, you know, 2 minutes, two different back and forths trying to push that line. I don't quite understand it.
By comparison, a guy who's not really going to make it at all. But you kind of have to like him, Andrew Yang.
Yeah, yeah.
So they're all calling for wealth taxes, right? And raising their hand, in effect. And Andrew Yang just looks at them and says, but wealth taxes have failed in Europe everywhere they've been tried.
Denmark, Germany, France, Sweden. He ticked them all off. They don't raise the revenue that they promised.
I mean, he was just telling something virtually every economist understands. And then he says, I think maybe we should think alternatively about a value-added tax, which is at least an interesting and debatable idea.
And but Elizabeth Warren isn't going there because that's, you know what that's called? A middle-class tax increase.
That's right.
But it is true that that's the tax, the VAT tax in Europe. That is what most European nations, maybe all of them, have. And that is because it's such a big money raiser, because it is aimed at the middle class. It is what funds national government-run healthcare. And that's what we have to end up with here. I'm sure we'll end up with a VAT.
Oh, it's almost a little surprising that some of these other Democratic candidates haven't brought that up, to tell you the truth, because it is such a revenue generator.
Yeah. The one other thing, let's finish on Bernie Sanders, because I thought a couple of bits on Bernie Sanders. One, he looked good to me. I mean, I don't know, he looks like he had been spending a couple of days at the beach after the healthcare, after his heart attack. Looked good, looked strong, gave a really good answer in regards to his health. And now he's getting the endorsement of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and the squad, apparently, which, of course, Ocasio-Cortez supported Bernie in 2016, but she'd stayed on the fence here despite her fame. And this is a big win for Bernie, I think. Obviously, endorsements aren't definitive in any way, but Elizabeth Warren would have loved to have it.
I think it's a big win for people who are already in the Bernie camp.
You know, don't think it's going to turn any others away from Warren?
I think it may turn some people away from Bernie, some people he needs to attract if he wants to rise a little bit.
Like who?
He's at 15-16% on the polls. If he wants to make this a real fight with Elizabeth Warren, he needs to go up from there. But that's his continual problem. I mean, I agree he looked good last night. It was really easy to forget that he just had a heart attack 2 weeks ago. But he is just so he just won't back down on anything. I mean, one of the questions I thought was most interesting was the CNN host asked him, you know, you were talking about a federal jobs guarantee. Andrew Yang's talking about automation, potentially putting, you know, 3 million truck drivers out of work. Are you really going to try to find all those people a government job? And he said, yeah, damn right, we're going to do that. I mean, it's just Bernie all the way down.
And then tellingly, Andrew Yang immediately said, you know what? Most people don't want to work for the federal government. It was a simple, clear, and true point.
But I guess my point about Sanders in regards to AOC and the endorsement and how he looked is that there had been a lot of people saying he's done, it's over, and he might drop out. Doesn't look like to me like he's dropping out anytime soon, if at all. And that, I think, will disappoint some people who thought that Warren could inherit the Bernie base.
Including probably a lot in the media. I mean, the media is kind of getting behind Elizabeth Warren. Maybe we should look for the underground attacks on Bernie Sanders yet to come.
Oh, I agree. The media is in the left-wing media. And I'm talking about the New York Times and the Washington Post and the MSNBC.
CNN.
CNN. They are in Warren's camp. I mean, the hagiography that you're seeing in some of these pieces, hard scrabble upbringing. I mean, if there's a discouraging word in those profiles, I struggle to find it.
My favorite was a news analysis piece the other day. that it said in a subheadline that Republican attacks on Elizabeth Warren for being inauthentic. Remember, this is someone who identified as Native American for years, apparently falsely, we can find out, because of her DNA. But Republican attacks on her as inauthentic are sexist tropes, the same that were used against Hillary Clinton. This is a news analysis piece.
Well, anyway, I thought it was a fascinating evening, maybe the most interesting so far, and we'll see how the polls shake out, because Democratic voters are the target here. Thank you, Dan. Thank you, Kyle. Thank you all for listening. We'll be back later in the week with another edition of Potomac Watch.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.